Schwab Asset Management is proud to sponsor the Advisor Upside Podcast with ETF.com. With bond market conditions looking upbeat for 2024, Schwab stands ready with a suite of low-cost fixed income ETFs. Learn more at schwabassetmanagement.com/welcome-ETFs. Welcome to another episode of Advisor Upside, powered by ETF.com. I'm your host, Jeff Benjamin, and we're going to be talking cryptocurrency with Jim Kreider, owner of Intentional Living FP, an Austin, Texas-based financial advisory firm. For those of you who are like me and are not completely fluent in the fast-evolving world of digital assets, we're going to let Jim talk us through it, starting with a big picture perspective and getting down to the portfolio management and investment levels. Jim, how you doing? And thanks for being here.
Hey, Jeff. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. I'm going to be taking notes because I'll be learning a lot. I'm going to start, like I said, big picture. What is the big deal with cryptocurrencies and why does it matter to us? Can't we just stick with the old-fashioned paper money that I have in my pocket right now?
You certainly could, at least for now. But I personally believe that it's wildly important, both now and moving forward. It is something that needs to be understood by advisors and individuals, and not only just understood, but also adopted. But again, obviously, proper adoption requires education. And that's why I'm glad to have this conversation with you.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem we're trying to solve for with cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, essentially the base problem, in order to arrive at the solution, we have to identify the base problem. That base problem is our money system is broken. So if you don't understand that, or if you don't believe that's the case, then Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies will seem like a proposed solution to a problem that was never posed. And then it could seem like just a fad. But if you start pulling those layers back of what is money and what is the state of our current money system, and then how is it fixed? In my opinion, the best presentation that we have is Bitcoin being the solution to this issue. I've taken a lot of heat from almost every other financial advisor out there for owning and having our clients own Bitcoin. But again, I challenge you to consider, what is money? Again, I've talked to a lot of financial planners who are really great with managing money, but have never stopped to think, what is it itself? So that's what it's setting out to solve.
I mean, some people might listen to you right now and say, this sounds like a doomsday scenario, that if you don't invest in crypto, you're going to be left with nothing when the global economy collapses or something like that. Are we talking about that?
Sort of. I mean, look in history, go back millennia and look at forms of money and how they've been debased from the controlling institution, and then what's the end state of that money that is debased. So, I mean, you can take this back to seashells, pearls, rhinestones on the Yap Islands. This can be Roman denarii. This can be German marks in post-World War I. This can be more recent, Venezuela. This can be looked at from places across the Middle East right now, South America, current date. So our money system is broken, and it's hard to see when we're in it. And yes, the US dollar is a strong currency compared to other fiat currencies on the world. So it sounds like I'm talking to a non-problem, but you have to zoom out, change the lens from which you're viewing this, and consider, how or why would this time be different? Or is it the same? We're just in the middle of it right now.
What would you say to somebody who said, well, crypto or Bitcoin has been incredibly volatile? That doesn't look like a stable solution to me.
So there's a lot to be said there. You have to think through adoption rates. So if you have something that came about organically, so the person or people who created Bitcoin, no one knows who this person is. They go by the pseudonym of Satoshi Nakamoto. Okay. This person started talking about cryptographically backed money on the internet back in 2008. These are conversations that have been had for decades prior to this. People were trying to create internet-based money, but they kept running into a couple issues. Those were digital scarcity. So like if I send you an email, I retain a copy of that email, and now you have a copy of that. So it's not digitally scarce. Mm-hmm. Okay. Also, the second issue these people are running into, who are way smarter than I am, kept running into a second problem of a decentralized ledger system. So how do we make it where this money system is not trusted by any central party? And those are the two big problems. Again, where digital scarcity and a decentralized ledger system. Well, Satoshi Nakamoto in 2008 started talking to these people on chat forums, essentially, and proposing the solutions that he came up with. He wrote a white paper on October 31st of 2008, highlighting, walking through what is Bitcoin, how it works, what's the code, and then citing his sources going back for a couple of decades of people who have contributed to this money system. So it's not something that came about arbitrarily or from a tech bro from his basement who wants to buy a Lamborghini. This is outrageously smart from an economic standpoint, from a computational standpoint, from a game theory standpoint. There's a lot of thought into this.
Mm-hmm.
So if this is something that was created just, you know, less than 2 decades ago, and it was sent out to a few people who are circulating a newsletter, basically, it would be weird to think of it being adopted linearly and not experiencing any volatility. So where Bitcoin is now, I would consider it as sort of like the internet adoption rate. And we're at like 1997 internet.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, Bitcoin is being adopted more quickly and by more diverse base than the internet was. So
right.
And you have to think, like, it's obvious now, but you have to consider that there's a hilarious clip I like to watch every once in a while. It's on YouTube of, I can't remember, it was like Good Morning America or the Today Show, one of those goofy talk shows. And the hosts are talking about the internet and they're trying to figure out what an email address is. And they don't know. They don't even know what the at symbol is. They say, oh, it's Good Morning America, A with a circle around it. What is this? What's the internet anyways?
I remember that clip. I've seen it. It was Katie Couric and I can't remember who else.
That's it. Yeah. So
that's the one. And they're asking their producer or something for information about it. But
exactly. He says, oh, the internet is, it's a lot of colleges use it for research.
The thing I see about digital is, or cryptocurrencies is, yeah, you could say, I mean, yeah, you could look at the internet now and say it's widely adopted. Everybody's got it on their phone and pretty much everybody uses it. But when you get to cryptocurrencies, first of all, it's so fast evolving. It seems like there's a new one introduced every day. We now have spot Bitcoin ETFs. We've got filings for Ethereum, spot Ethereum ETFs. There are futures-based ETFs out there. I don't know how long those things will last. But what you have is and you and I have talked about this a little bit, Jim. You have the performance side of it, the investment side of it, where if you invest, you can invest in these spot Bitcoin ETFs and you can ride the performance. You can benefit from the price gains, I guess. But you're still missing out on a giant piece of this cryptocurrency movement, and that you're, you know, buying a spot Bitcoin ETF doesn't get you that protection from the global monetary breakdown or whatever you're anticipating, right?
Yeah, I know it sounds like I have a tinfoil hat on, and that's not my intent. Again, if we look at the amount of money that's been put into circulation in just the last few years is astronomical. There's a fun website to go to. It's usdebtclock.org.
Uh-huh.
You should take a look at that. Listeners, just go look at that. It's astounding. It makes you personally, it makes me frustrated that I have to pay taxes when the amount of my annual tax bill was just created in our debt in a microsecond. Why do I even pay taxes? The government can create new money for free instantaneously because they decide to. That puts into us a new tax called inflation. That's a secret hidden tax that didn't require my purchasing of a bond. It didn't require us voting it in. It was just passed. You know, just last week, there's a $1.2 trillion bill that was passed. It was put on the docket at 2 a.m. It was 1,000 pages and was passed the next morning at 10 a.m. How does that make sense? Our money itself is broken. We don't know how much money will exist right now or how much money will exist.
Mm-hmm.
So Bitcoin, the base case to understanding why you should even consider looking at Bitcoin, just start pulling the thread of learning about this, is there will only ever be 21 million. There's a finite amount. So money itself is a means of communicating.
Just to be clear, you're talking 21 million coins, right?
That's right. 21 million Bitcoin will ever exist.
Right.
So we know there's a finite amount. And money, what money is, it's a means of communicating, storing, and transferring value across space and time. So the problem here is if you distort the monetary systems themselves, as you come in and create new money, then you are distorting the communication systems. That's where inflation and the value of things, like my grocery bill is probably 45% higher than it was just a few years back. Avocados and meat and bananas are not 45% more nutritious or tastier. So what happened here? Mm-hmm. They didn't get more scarce. It's because the money that you're using to purchase these things has been devalued. So that means of communicating bananas are worth this and our money should be worth this has been distorted. That's why there's so much frustration and fear and worry and nihilism with people with money right now. It's because it just doesn't seem to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that is in its very base case, what Bitcoin comes to solve. Now that can be solved through having it as a decentralized monetary system where we're not counting on a person, a government, an institution to fix this thing. There's no rules that can be implemented by a particular person to change how much Bitcoin can be created or at rate it will be issued or how it's created how the code will work. That's different than every other cryptocurrency out there. These other cryptocurrencies are basically just sort of like pyramid schemes that were put out by companies. And they had an initial amount that they were issued, and then they go and hype it up and leave other people with the bag. So instead of trusting the US government, you're trusting another network or group or individual to control your money. And I think that's foolish as well. So you have to understand when I talk about cryptocurrency, what I'm speaking to specifically is Bitcoin versus everything else we have, fiat currencies, cryptocurrencies. Now to your question, I apologize, got sidetracked. So Bitcoin itself versus holding ETFs. Well, of course, like part of the, I think most people I know, and personally, the reason I got into Bitcoin at first, well, the reason I really got into Bitcoin at first was back in the COVID lockdowns of March of 20, realizing that, wow, suddenly there's talks about sending out these paychecks to people. The government just shut down every business, but yet we're going to keep our economy marching on. How's that supposed to work? Something doesn't make mm-hmm. sense. So I started going down the system of we need something that's a hard asset that the government can't just arbitrarily create. So that caused me to start looking at gold, silver, looking at further just index investing. Like mm-hmm. Should that be something that should just be used as a bank account essentially? And I think that's what most people use index funds as, is essentially a means of a savings mechanism or Bitcoin. And after pulling that thread for a while, I came to the conclusion that I think Bitcoin is the hardest form of money that we have and ever will have. That's where I landed. So part of that is understanding that I need Bitcoin to protect my purchasing power. And again, going back to your point earlier, yes, I should expect volatility. The volatility, it's Bitcoin is not changing. The code of Bitcoin, how it works, how it functions, the fact that every 10 minutes a new block is mined and therefore new Bitcoin hit the network in transactions, that doesn't change. So what leads to the volatility here is not Bitcoin, it's people. It's people understanding it and adopting it. That's what's volatile. And I think mm-hmm. everyone who listens to this can understand that humans are emotional with how we view our investments, how we view our money, and especially how we view new technologies. But you see this volatility continue, yet every 4 years, most people think, and I talked to someone just a couple of days ago who started laughing at me when I talked about Bitcoin. They said, I thought Bitcoin died. Oh yeah, that used to be popular. I didn't realize it was popular again. Well, hard money is always going to be popular. So the reason this happens though, is there's, and I don't want to get super far into it. I'm sure you don't want me to either. But basically every 4 years, there's what's called a halving mechanism, which mm-hmm. creates a tightening or suffocation of the new supply of Bitcoin that's being created every 10 minutes. Okay. When that happens, the supply demand mechanism is obviously impacted. If you have a reduced supply and stable demand or steady demand, then the price in theory would go up. And then you have these people, weirdos like me, who have been buying Bitcoin all this time, who just continue to gobble it up. So then if that happens, then we'd expect the price to go up some. But then you have most normal people who think Bitcoin's, you know, beanie babies or tulips, mm-hmm. or just don't pay attention to it. Then they see that it's going up a bunch. They say, yeah, maybe I'll buy a little bit. And then what usually happens, it leads to some sort of hype mania and other cryptocurrencies start getting speculated on and something crazy happens and it burns. But through that time, a new group of people went out and moved from hype and sensationalism to education and true long-term adoption that builds a new base of people who actually understand the underlying issue and what Bitcoin is, and therefore a new class of people or base. When I say class of people, like the class of 2020 or 2021, these people who graduate into understanding this thing in a sense. So you have this new group of people who understand how it works and why you should have it. And that's a new base level of long-term adopters.
Let's talk about the distinction between owning it directly and how you do that and owning it through spot Bitcoin ETFs or Cash App or some other way. Because it's not a small distinction, correct?
Correct. Again, so a lot of people buy Bitcoin initially, and that's why a lot of, you know, advisors out there might start dabbling in it with for their clients, maybe putting a couple percent in their portfolios, is trying to achieve alpha against the market. And that's great. You know, I'm all for trying to help your clients make money. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And in theory, the ETF should do that. It's a spot Bitcoin ETF, so it should follow the price movements of Bitcoin itself, and you should be good. Of course, as you just highlighted, there are a number of things that differentiate the ETF versus Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. One of those is Bitcoin never closes. It's not a company. There's not a CEO. There's none of this. So Bitcoin trades 24/7, 365. It doesn't care what's going on. So you can have Bitcoin pumping over a weekend or dumping over a weekend, and you own the ETF, there's nothing you can do. If you see that Bitcoin, so back in March of 20, Bitcoin dropped intraday by 40%. And during that time, I had just moved a lot of money into Bitcoin. I have friends, though, who like real time went and sold a bunch of stuff so they could buy more Bitcoin at that moment. You know, and if can you imagine sitting there and you see that what you think is the best buying opportunity in the world, but you can't scoop it up because the market's closed that day. So that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. Also, you're trusting someone. If you go and buy Bitcoin on your own through an exchange, you procure it, you move it off an exchange onto a self-custodied wallet. You own this thing. It is a bearer asset. Sort of like if we went and bought gold and put it in a safe at your house or buried it on your farm or something like that. You know, there's a level of being smart with how you handle this, obviously, and taking the precautions to hold this thing. Otherwise, you would alternatively go and buy this and trust another institution. So that'd be like buying gold, but then keeping it at a Swiss bank. And you're assuming that Swiss bank actually has your gold and will be able to protect it. It won't mess up against a robbery. And they're not lying to you about how much is there. Now, fortunately, Bitcoin is a lot easier to audit than gold is. You know, gold actually verified that this gold you have is actually gold, not some other metal that's been plated with gold. Bitcoin, we can verify easy. It's just code. But there is that place of, am I trusting a single point or authority with a whole lot of Bitcoin out there that all these institutions are holding? And that's a attack vector. Again, you have to understand monetary history to understand why all these things make sense. Mm-hmm. So back in the 30s, there was an executive order 6102. Are you familiar with that?
No.
So 6102 was an executive order in the 1930s where made it where individuals were not allowed to own gold outside of ornamental jewelry. Okay. So you had a time you had to turn in all of your gold. And the government would give you basically $20 per ounce, okay? And if you did not turn your gold in, then you would go to prison and or be faced with a large fine, okay? So you turn it in for $20 an ounce. Mm-hmm. Soon after, everyone's forced to turn their gold in, basically it was confiscated, the government repriced gold to $30 per ounce. So did the US dollar become, or did your gold suddenly appreciate by 50%, or rather did the government's gold appreciate by 50%? No, the dollars that you just got in exchange for your gold were just devalued massively. Okay. So anyways, the 6102 attack vector, that is something that technically could happen with Bitcoin. The government said, hey, you own Bitcoin, you've got to turn this in. Now, if I own Bitcoin on a wallet or just have 12 words memorized in my head, someone could say, Jim, give me your Bitcoin. And I can say, if I choose, I can say over my dead body. If it's held on Coinbase or a trusted third party through an ETF or an exchange or any of these things, the government could come to them, subpoena, and say, hey, give us all your Bitcoin. And they would probably turn it over. Okay. So that's another attack vector.
Okay. Let me shift in the time we have remaining here to financial advisors and spot Bitcoin ETFs. How much are your clients owning? How much do you think clients should own? And if spot Bitcoin's the only way you can invest, because not everybody's going to own it on their own hard drive or whatever, is that good enough?
Man, you're gonna make me sound like a lunatic. So again, I take an incredible amount of heat from financial planners regularly. They think I'm an idiot. I think they're wrong. So we can agree to disagree, and I don't care. So most financial planners out there, from what I'm aware of, tell their clients to not own any Bitcoin at all. Mm-hmm. From what I've experienced, those who do put up with it would have their clients allocate 1 to maybe 3% of their portfolio, which theoretically, if Bitcoin does what I believe it will do, should be possibly enough to retain your existing purchasing power of your portfolio. Mm-hmm. Now that's for right if you bought some now. If you wait 10 years, you're gonna have to put a lot more into it because your other assets will be devalued in comparison to Bitcoin. But I digress. So typically advisors have zero. Those who will put up with it typically have 1 to 3%. I'm a lunatic. I admit this. Now this, mm-hmm. I have these conversations with clients constantly. New clients, we talk through what is this? Why should you own it? If you should own it, how much should you own? Allocation, location, how, all these things. Now, our average client at this moment has, a few years ago, it was 10 to 20% of their total investable assets. Mm-hmm. At now, our average client's probably closer to about 35%. Wow. The thing is, as this thing appreciates, it's just gobbling up their portfolio. And it's becoming this massively overweighted position in their portfolio. And that's just because Bitcoin is the best performing asset almost every year the last decade. So if you buy something that just massively outperforms everything else, you have to consider how often do you and how often do you rebalance this thing?
So I'm assuming your clients are not owning it through the spot Bitcoin ETFs, right?
In general, we have exposure a couple of ways. So the majority of our clients do own Bitcoin directly. So we go to an exchange. So the exchange that we typically use is called River. So you go to an exchange, you put US dollars onto River, and you buy Bitcoin with it. You give them USD, they give you Bitcoin.
And then you're getting direct ownership, right?
That's right. We take it off of River, we put onto a hardware wallet, we call it a day. Okay.
Okay. What about Cash App? Can you do it the same way on Cash App?
Yeah, you do Cash App, River, there's a company called Swan.
You're buying it there and you got to move it onto a hard drive.
Correct. You could keep it on the exchange, but you're trusting that it's not FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried's going to take your and run away. So again, the whole purpose of this is peer-to-peer monetary system that removes trust from third parties. If you're mm-hmm. going to keep it on an exchange, that's yet another third party you just decide to trust. So there is that way. The majority of our clients own it. A second way that our clients in general have exposure to Bitcoin, or at least the price movement of Bitcoin, is through right now it's a portfolio that I've built that has a handful of companies mixed from the Fidelity Bitcoin ETF. Mm-hmm. There's a company called MicroStrategy. MicroStrategy back in 2020 basically put their entire company's balance sheet into Bitcoin. So we own some MicroStrategy. We also own some miners. Now, obviously, it's not financial advice or investment advice, but that's a way that a lot of our clients have exposure at the moment as well. So, for instance, how that works. So last year, this is short term. Don't take this for anything except for anecdotal for fun. Okay, so like last year, our stock portfolio last year did 23%. Bitcoin last year did 155% roughly.
Yeah. Okay.
So if, imagine just putting a couple percent of your portfolio into this, which I ran numbers a while ago, last winter, in the winter of last year, I ran some numbers to see if you had a 60-40 portfolio over the last 5 years. And then also, what if you had a 100% stock portfolio, 65% US, 35% international? Mm-hmm. What would happen if you threw in different allocation weights to Bitcoin? I did that like 1%, 5, 10, 20, 50, all these numbers. See, like from a pure performance perspective, but then also from a risk-adjusted perspective, which of these would have been the ideal allocation? So we're looking at Sharpe ratio.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, you would have to be outrageously stubborn to look at this and say, you know what? It's just a Ponzi scheme.
We're coming up on time here. I'm gonna have to wrap this up. Really good okay. stuff. I mean, I'm gonna leave it to our audience here to get to me, get to us on social media, get to us on ETF.com, and let us know when you want to hear more from Jim. I'll get him back on here again. A lot of good stuff. I think everybody's curiosity should be piqued and interest and maybe a little bit of fear. Thank you very much, Jim. Thanks for your time. Jim Kreider, owner of Intentional Living FP in Austin, Texas. If you're looking for, I guess, an advisor to steer you or guide you through the crypto maze, it sounds like there's still a lot of questions out there. Thanks for listening, folks. Find this podcast along with Exchange Traded Fridays wherever you listen to your podcast. And don't forget to go to ETF.com to subscribe to our regular newsletters. Thanks a lot. See you next time. Schwab Asset Management is proud to sponsor the Advisor Upside Podcast with ETF.com. With bond market conditions looking upbeat for 2024, Schwab stands ready with a suite of low-cost fixed income ETFs. Learn more at schwabassetmanagement.com/welcome-ETFs.